This is the Change Management Podcast by the University of South Wales. My name is Dr. Louise Bright, and I'm joined by Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute of Leadership and Management. As well as her day job, Kate is also a keynote speaker, researcher and Forbes blogger. In this episode, we'll be discussing what new challenges and approaches leaders should look out for so their people and organisations can thrive in the post-pandemic world. But before we start, Kate, whenever I think about leadership and management, I think about ILM. And I often think about you because I've seen you talk so many times on the subject of leadership and management. But for our audience, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started my career in the car industry, actually, and then moved into academia, into a business school where I was an academic number of years, specialising in personal development and leadership. And then I joined the Institute of Leadership and Management, ILM, in 2013 and have been there ever since, overseeing the research programme, of course, and speaking at various events. And also, particularly recently, much more online, many more podcasts, many more videos. So the work has been changing all the time.
What do you think, you know, from your work and engaging with leaders and managers from lots of different sectors through your ILM connections, what are the big challenges facing leaders at the moment?
Well, in lots of ways, they're the same. They're about uncertainty and coping with the unexpected. Because however many plans we make or strategies we develop, we don't know what the future holds. But what COVID has done has brought into sharp relief how we don't know what is around the corner. And the only way we can deal with that is by being sufficiently agile and responsive to change to suit the circumstances we find ourselves in. And we've seen so many examples of businesses doing that, that there are now calls for certainty and things getting back to normal, but of course they won't. And I think we need to hold on to the fact we can't predict the future, but we can get ready to adapt to whatever comes our way if that is the mindset we adopt.
Interested in learning about driving organisational change? Search for the USW Changemaker Programme.
So what sort of different approaches are you seeing leaders take to kind of tackle those challenges that you've touched on there about, you know, so much uncertainty?
Well, what I think we've noticed most of all, and I think in early days of video conferencing, when people were not familiar or indeed comfortable with the technology, we were getting some very curious insights, weren't we, into people's homes. We were seeing piles of washing, toasters, children, dogs, delivery men. People are a lot more adept and managing their technology better. But what it did do was remind us that people have a whole complicated life with lots of competing pressures on their time, and work actually is only part of that. When you were seeing people only in the office or only at business meetings, you could almost forget that they had this other part for themselves that was a parent and a carer, had a hobby, you know, shared their living accommodation with lots of other people, or whatever those insights are. So I think that has made leadership, and we do hear about this quite a lot, a call for more compassion and more understanding of the complexities that people are just managing even before they can start doing their work. We've also seen how, and I love this, where so many people ask for flexible working or being able to work from home, and we're told, no, it wasn't possible, didn't fit our business model. We actually have to have people where we can see them. And then in a space of days, well, yes, that's fine. Get on with it. Get on with it as quickly as you can. And we've heard different estimates from the plans that businesses had in order to flip to home working. And there were some people saying 2 years. I've even heard some companies talking about 4 years. And we did it in like 14 days. So that confidence that I think a lot of people got from being able to deal with the technology, changing the way they did things, has actually also, of course, affected leaders. They don't have to watch people to know whether they're doing a good job. We don't have to have a 9-to-5 day. We can do things at different points in the day and still be productive. We don't have to sit next to people in order to be able to collaborate with them. So we have learned so much, but it's exactly the sort of learning that we need to be able to cope with the unexpected.
You're right as well. I think, you know, we've all enjoyed seeing people's pets and kids and stuff, you know, come into the background of video calls. But it was interesting. I was on a call last week with an organization that I haven't worked with a great deal. And before the meeting started, one of the men on the call was asked, "Oh, you look like you've got a shower head behind you. What is that thing behind you?" And he said, "Oh, that's my magnifying glass for my cross stitch." And everyone fell about laughing and said, "What are you joking?" And he was like, no, I do cross stitch as a hobby. And then he proceeded to show us all the like amazing cross stitch works of art that he'd done. And he kind of commissions animals and pet portraits all using cross stitch. So you're right, it completely changes your knowledge and your perception of individuals that you might work with every day of the week, but only see them in that suit and tie and with their work persona on. And I suddenly saw this individual in a completely different light, which is really interesting, isn't it?
Exactly. And what you've also, even I could hear it in your voice, Lou, there's a new respect and admiration for that colleague. And you're thinking, goodness, they've got talents I wasn't even aware of. And okay, cross-stitch doesn't immediately sound transferable, but the fact that he is able to do that, to be good at it, to relax when he's doing it, and be creative, no doubt, with colour and patterns, actually, you can transfer that to the workplace.
I'm interested as well. You mentioned compassion. And I think one of the things that I'm becoming more aware of, certainly since the pandemic, is this notion of compassionate leadership. And I think, you know, we look at world leaders, don't we? New Zealand's Jacinda Ardern, and, you know, she's all over social media for, you know, not actually being a shouty, preachy, bang the table leader, but actually being a really effective leader through compassion. Can you teach compassionate leadership, or do you just think that's, you know, you either are or you aren't?
No, I think you can definitely develop a sense or an understanding of its importance and role model the behaviours or watch people playing them out. It's interesting you mentioned Jacinda, because International Leadership Week, the Institute held a couple of weeks ago, one of our speakers from New Zealand had actually just come back from the airport, and Jacinda was there without security, chatting to other people who were waiting for friends to visit them or to leave New Zealand. And she said there was something so human and approachable about her. So we are ultimately all human, and maybe we put on a front or a facade when we're at work, but actually most of us can get in touch with what we care about, and the fact we, on the whole, most of us do care about other people. And it's okay to say that and act in ways that show that.
Again, you know, with all of these different topics we cover in the podcast, we come back to people, and you're constantly coming back to people in this conversation. How do you think leaders are bringing their people along with them as they navigate, you know, these really tricky changing times?
Well, I don't want to overstress flexible working, because I think we've all heard about that so much. But if you look at the companies that have embraced it and taken a very person-centered view of that, I'm talking particularly about Paul Hamer from Sir Robert McAlpine that I was talking to at the Flexpo exhibition a few weeks ago. And what they're doing is saying, what works for individuals? What works for teams? Let's try and get that into our business model. So make sure it makes sense for everybody involved. And that to me was a great example of somebody who's thinking about people, but also thinking about business at the same time. I think we've heard great things about the financial services compensation scheme from Adecco, where they are talking about what they're doing to put their people first, writing about it on LinkedIn, being reported, being spoken about at conferences. So there are a lot of people understanding that if you're not seeing people, you've suddenly got to trust them in a way perhaps you didn't even do before. They are absolutely not disappointing you. You're understanding them better at a human level. There's almost nothing that you can't do in terms of introducing change, as long as you maintain that level of trust and respect.
What other organisations, from your experience, are getting this right? And what, you know, what can we learn from them?
Well, I think those examples I've just given you there are the people that I particularly heard about that are getting it right, are taking it seriously. And what we can learn from them, I think you've said it really, Lou, that putting people first actually makes great business sense. Because if you value your employees, you care about them, you want them to bring their whole self to work. And that's another thing we heard a lot about during International Leadership Week. The idea, if you have to come to work and pretend to be other than you are, how much energy that takes up and how much energy that you cannot then have available to do your work. So we want organisations that are inclusive genuinely because they do really celebrate difference, and we want different people there because we know the more we represent the customers that we're trying to serve, the better our offer is going to be, the more enthusiastic our employees will be about the products and services that we're providing, the closer they'll feel to customers and the more wanting to please them. And those are the lessons that we have to learn. Look after your people, get your business model right, and you're going to be a great place to work and you're going to achieve great results.
And it's hard, isn't it? I think because we, you know, particularly we measure success by things like, oh, reports, money, you know, actual things that you might have produced. When actually as a leader, you might be spending an awful lot of time with people, helping them feel valued and helping them to be very productive. And I don't always think that we overtly value that. I know I felt many times, oh my gosh, I sat here at 9 o'clock, I finished at 6 o'clock, what have I done? And I actually haven't written anything down, but actually what I've done is talk to people who've needed to be listened to. But how do you articulate that to your leaders as you doing something effective?
That's a great question, because unless we incentivize and we specify the sorts of behaviors we want in clear enough terms for us to be able to evidence them. So rather than judging you on your performance, you should be judged totally on the performance of the people that you're leading, managing, mentoring. But we're so obsessed, aren't we, with individual targets for individual people about what they individually can do. And in the example you've given, it's nothing about you. It's great servant leadership. This is all, how can I help you do a better job? And therefore, should you not be judged on the better job that other people are doing, rather on some contrived targets that are based on your own small area of activity? When you think about it, even small businesses are complicated in terms of stakeholder management, supply chains. How many people can genuinely say that they can work on their own and deliver results on their own and they should be rewarded on their own? Hardly anybody. And it's remembering the interdependencies that's really important. How we set targets should be something that people really give attention to. What is it they're incentivizing? What are the behaviors they want? What's going to be good for the business? And how are we going to articulate those in a way that makes sense? And it's not easy. I'm not saying that for a moment. But I think we think too much about individual contributions and not about how collectively and collaboratively that's how we're really delivering value.
I completely agree with that. And I know, you know, when you set targets at, you know, kind of appraisal time, it's so easy to have a numerical target on something and just say, well, we're going to increase that by 10%. There we are. That feels nice. And we've grown something important. And yet, you know, how many people, when you do those sorts of appraisals, really think about the organization's values and build those into targets and behaviors, like you say? It's a really good point to reflect on, I think. Final question for you, Kate. How do you think we can best prepare our leaders for a post-pandemic world?
Interestingly, we're just about to publish some research which sort of answers this question. We ask lots of questions, but one thing that we really focused on and has caused us a great deal of interest is we asked about priorities. What are the priorities that your organisation has currently, and what do you think they're going to be in 5 years' time? And then we ask 5 to 10 years' time. And where we have seen the biggest shift or the most interesting finding is the number of companies that said, actually, at the moment, we really care about rules and procedures and compliance. But what we should be caring about is innovation, and that's where we think it's going. So there was such a widespread acceptance of the importance of innovation, and that was in all sectors, public, private, and the third sector, saying, oh goodness, you know, innovation is moving up the corporate agenda. So what leaders need to be ready for that post-pandemic world is, well, how do we innovate? What sort of techniques do we need? What sort of processes do we need to embed in our business so we can essentially try new ideas, fail quickly, recover, try another one? And moving away from that sort of rules and regulations compliance mindset to a much freer one where we think about experimentation, we tolerate, we're forgiving about mistakes because we're always looking for new and better ways to do things.
There's so much in there that I think we could unpack if we have more time. But thank you ever so much for your time. That was really insightful. And I can't wait to listen to this back because I think there's a lot of learning to be had in the conversation that we've just had. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Lou. I've really enjoyed that.
Thank you for listening. If you want to hear more of the Change Management podcast, then please subscribe. And to find out more about this podcast and our business services at the University of South Wales, please visit southwales.ac.uk/business.